düğün ettiğim bir koca.
Okay, so I want to welcome everyone in. It's so good to see everybody. And I'm glad it looks like we have, we were talking before, we have a range of states and provinces coming together, Baruch Hashem, via Zoom, to learn. And to learn, not only to learn, but to learn in order to teach. Lilmod la'asalamed. The concept is that we'll have a chance to look at some important questions now, and see how a sugya comes together, hopefully in a way that not only we can enjoy ourselves, but that we can share with family, with whoever we're spending Leil Shavuos with. And I want to really start with this. So when we think of tefillah, when someone says davening, what comes to mind? Is it this? The sitter? A lot of words, hundreds of pages. Shavuos is coming up. In some communities, a separate machzor for Shavuos. The Shmona Esrei, the text. Or when I say daven, do I mean, you know, whispering something to Ribbono Shel Olam? Before a test, before a challenge, a personal challenge, an emotional challenge, something financial, something interpersonal. And I turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and I say, God, please help me. Which one is davening? And I think different people have different sort of gut reactions. If you start to think about it, well, they're both davening, but they're so different. One is so formal. One is so fixed. The other one is so fluid and informal. And which one is the real davening? There's a famous idea of from Soloveitchik. I know it's not Rosh Hashanah is not coming up anytime soon. But if we're talking about tefillah, there's a beautiful insight that the Rav develops at length, but the core of it appears right here. He suggested, you know, there are a lot of mitzvahs that we do in shul. Right now we feel very shulless. But in a normal month, in a normal year, shul isn't only for davening. Over the course of the Seder HaTefillah, there's so many other mitzvahs that we do. We hear Kriya Satorah, we shake Lulav, we say Halal, so many different mitzvahs. We say Kriya Shema, but when we look at the core of tefillah, and when the Chachamim speak in the Mishnah Gemara about tefillah, they always meant specifically Shmona Esrei. We don't generally do mitzvahs in the middle of Shmona Esrei. We don't say Shema in the middle of Shmona Esrei. We don't shake Lulav in the middle of Shmona Esrei. We don't lay in the middle of Shmona Esrei. It's beforehand or afterwards. But Tefillah, Shmona Esrei, is usually reserved and focused. One of the only mitzvahs that we do in the middle of Shmona Esrei is Tkiyah Shofar. Right? Certainly in the middle of Chazaras Hashatz, when the Shliach Tzibur repeats the Shmona Esrei, we highlight the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah with the blowing of the Shofar. In some communities, even in the quiet Shmona Esrei, you blow the shofar as well, those who daven nusach svar. And the question is, why? It seems so out of place. Why are you doing some other mitzvah in the middle of the Shmona Esrei? So the Rav suggested, for this reason and for other reasons, what appears here in the box, the shofar isn't just a mitzvah, it's actually a type of tefillah. It's a type of prayer. It's a nonverbal prayer. It's a tefillah without words. But it's a way, of sort of like a primal cry to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're reaching out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a type of tefillah, and it belongs in Shmona Esrei. And that's beautiful, and that's poetic. But if you stop and ask yourself, what does that mean? What does that mean, to daven without saying words? How do you daven without saying words? Daven without words, that seems a world of distance from a formal text of tefillah. So which one is it? You might ask yourself, or you might ask the people around you, what else bothers them about tefillah? If they're really trying to not just sort of go with the routine and do what they do, but understand it, what bothers them about tefillah? I know, let's take a sidebar just for a moment. Let's step away and ask ourselves what you and I have just been doing. Because in thinking about how you might want to present a concept, you're probably going to want to think about two things. One are hooks, and the other one's thinking about your audience. There are natural questions that might catch someone's interest. There are natural questions that if you raise them, people will wonder, yeah, how come? Let's try to solve that puzzle. And you need to know your audience. The questions that appeal to me aren't necessarily the questions that bother you. The questions that bother you might not be the questions that bother the people that you're spending Shavuos with. So I just gave you an example of some questions that might naturally appeal to some people. You're going to want to think about your audience if you're going to be sharing this sugya this year with others, with family, over the course of Shavuos. So you're going to want to ask yourself as we go through this this conversation this year, what are the sort of the natural questions that would pull in my audience? And there's one other concept to think about. Besides the concept of the hook that will grab someone's attention naturally, and obviously audience appreciation, think about who it is that you're trying to reach, with whom are you trying to share, take a look at the bottom of the first page. That little graphic there, see the little Q leading to the big A. Because it's so often true in life in general, and certainly in learning Torah, that turning a small key can open a very big door. Oftentimes in learning, we might begin by looking at what look like small questions, questions about details, some side detail of a topic. A part of the magic of Talmud Torah is that very often when you seek to solve what looks like first like a small question, a detailed question, and the answer, you open big vistas. It could lead to, when you get to solve that question, it could lead to big ideas. And we're going to experience that phenomenon right now. In order to understand sort of the big picture of what's tefillah all about, and like we were saying before, is tefillah formal? Is it informal? Could there be such a thing as a wordless tefillah? Is tefillah just saying the words in the siddur? Is it intimate, fluid, natural conversation with the Kaddish Baruch Hu? Is it in Hebrew? Is it in English? You know, will the real tefillah please stand up? In order to solve that, we're going to step back for a moment and get into some details first. But we're going to see that the little Q is going to lead, hopefully, to a big A. The little questions hopefully lead to big, broad vistas in the answer. So let's take a look at one particular aspect of tefillah. I want to take a look now at specifically the topic of kavana and tefillah. We usually translate it as paying attention or concentrating. Having kavana when you daven, and again, as I said before, when the Chachamim use the word tefillah in the Mishnah and the Gemara, they mean not davening sort of loosely, but specifically the height of davening, which is Shmona Esrei. And we're going to look at a detail within a detail. We're going to look at kavana and tefillah, and let's look at one particular problem that is going to crop up when we look at two different sources in the Gemara about kavana and tefillah. Let's get started. Source number one, source number two. The Maamar Makomos you have are designed, hopefully, to be user-friendly. So everything is translated. The translation is my own. The translation is fluid. The translation is not always literal, but I hope it will prove to be useful for people who are learning. So we're going to take a look first at two Gemaras. Two Gemaras, both in Maseches Brachos. The middle topic, the central topic of Maseches Brachos is Tefillah, in the fourth and fifth Prakim, the fourth and fifth chapters of Maseches Brachos. So sources one and two are both, as you see in Brachos, Daf Lamed, Daf Lamed Dalet, 30 and 34, happens to be in the fourth and fifth Prakim. If you want to, feel free later to open up an actual Gemara and take a look inside. But here you have the critical clips. Gemara, the source number one, Gemara Brachos Daf Lamed, Amar Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says, if you look at the larger story, it's in the middle of a story, an episode happening to different Amoraim, but here's the gist of it that's relevant for us. Here's the key line. Rabbi Eliezer made the following statement. La'olam yamod adam es atzmo. A person needs to measure himself like a midah. You have to evaluate, measure yourself, self-assess. What are you measuring? Im yachal l'chav in es libo yispalo. V'im lav al yispalo. Don't just dive right into davening. Don't just dive right into Shmoneh Esrei. I first have to measure myself, look in the mirror, so to speak, and ask, am I ready to be in the zone or not? If I can have kavana, great, then I'll daven. If I can't have kavana, There's no tefillah without kavana. That's source number one. Now turn your attention in the gray box to the other gemara, to source number two. Hamispalel, tzara shechavnas liba b'kulam. A fellow is davening. You really ought to have kavana in all of the brachas, right? Right away, that you really ought to. Right? The mood is a little bit like, ideally. But if you can't have kavana in all the brachas, don't worry. At the minimum, you got to have kavana in one of the brachas. So Shmona Esrei has 18, 19 brachos. So the second source is saying kavana is obviously ideal throughout Shmona Esrei, but it's really only critical in one bracha. And which bracha, by the way? If you would stop right here, you might say, pick your favorite bracha. Right? For many of us, Rifa'enu, asking for health is very central. For many of us, Baruch Aleinu, asking about economic stability, that's really critical. And some of us are very focused on Mashiach, et semach David Avdecha, you know. Some of us are worried about that big test coming up, Atachonin L'adam Das, right? Spiritual growth, Hashiveinu, all sorts of personal problems, Gol Yisrael, you know, different brachas appeal to different people. So the Gemara says, well, not you don't get to pick any one bracha. Amar b'chia, amar of safrim, shemcha de b'rabbi, but avos. So this line of Amaroim, Rabbi Chia quotes of Safra, who in turn quotes one of the Talmidim, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, that when we said, at the very least, you should have kavana in one bracha, we mean specifically avos, the first bracha, Magen Avram. Okay. So the second, if you think about the second Gemara for a moment, so what's it saying? What's it saying? Well, kavana is certainly ideal throughout Shemoneh Esrei, but if it's really hard, okay, just at the minimum, you got to have kavana the first bracha. How does that compare to the first Gemara that we read? They're both talking about kavana, and they're both talking about how kavana is critical. Right, so that's what they have in common. But what would you say is the difference between the two? Feel free to raise your hand or just yell it out. If you prefer to put it in the chat, what you're thinking. Right, right. So Rachel's making a great point. Right? The first Gemara is very cut and dried. If you can have Kavana, go ahead and daven. If there's no Kavana, just forget about it. Wait till later, right? Maybe it happens sometimes. You rush into mincha, you're coming from class, you're coming from work, whatever it is. You grab a mincha and, you sort of like zip and zip out. Your brother said, whoa, wait, catch your breath. Are you ready to focus? If yes, great. But if not, not. Right? And the second one is more nuanced. Well, if you can't have kavan throughout, let's try it like this. Maybe let's try it like that. And so one of the angles... So one of the angles of what Rachel is saying is sort of the tone is different. Another angle of what Rachel is saying is even just in terms of content, the second Gemara said that kavana is ideal throughout Shemoneh Esrei, but as long as you have kavana in the first bracha, you're good to go. The first Gemara didn't sound like that. The tone of the first Gemara was kavana is critical throughout the Shemoneh Esrei. And that's the puzzle that arises from comparing the two. As a matter of fact, Tosus, if you open a Gemara, a full Gemara, you'll see on the Tosis connected to the second source, and Daf Lamed Aleph raises this problem. They try to give a solution. Maybe that's what the first Gemara means also. Maybe they both really just mean, it's ideal. It's ideal throughout, but it's only critical in the first bracha. But what I want to take a look at is the Rambam. Because what the Rambam does, here are sources 3 and 4. The Rambam wrote a Sefer Halacha, the Mishnah Torah, his major halachic work. It's not comments on the Gemara. What he tried to do, he said, look, Gemara is a conversation, and Gemara is so fluid, and like any good conversation, it's sort of, get around from one topic to another, which is part of the beauty of learning, but it also can make it tough if you're actually trying to know, how do I live this? What do I do? What's the bottom line? So the Rambam, in writing his Mishnah Torah, one of his major goals was to take the whole beautiful garden of Talmud, of Gemara, and organize everything. What's the bottom line? What's the bottom line, lahalacha, that emerged from each Gemara? And let's put it back into a strict logical order so you can find things where they belong. Gemara is a conversation, and pieces come up in different places, and the Mishnah Torah was an attempt to pull out the bottom line and strict organization. Location is key in Rambam, as in real estate. Location, location, location. Rambam was a real stickler for organization. He clearly had a very organized mind, and he's very upfront and direct that one of his primary goals in writing his Mishnah Torah, writing his code of halacha, his sefer halacha, was to put everything back into order, back into logical order. So that's it. When you learn Rambam, looking at where things belong is key. And what's fascinating is, I told you before, the Tosfos says, well, the first Gemara really means the same as the second Gemara. Yes, Kavanah is important, but it's only critical in that first bracha. Now, if that was the case, if you were Tosfos and you were writing a code of halacha, you would only have one entry. And how many entries would you have? Just one. The one entry would say, Kavanah is ideal throughout Shmoneh Esrei. It's really important. Make sure that you have it. But if you don't have it, so then at least it's critical only in the first bracha. The Rambam, though, and if in terms of how you present this, you may or may not want to give that whole bibliography I just gave you the last minute or two, sort of that perspective on Rambam. You can figure out how much you want to give, tailor it to your audience. It is critical to make the point, though, that what you're about to see in sources 3 and 4 is from this work of halacha by the Rambam, who lives several centuries after the Gemara, who is trying to give, number one, trying to give bottom line halacha lamasa, and trying to be very organized. And that second point is key in many Rambams, including here, because what's interesting here is, as we're about to see, the sources 3 and 4, the two passages of Rambam, each one is quoting one of the two Gemaras. In other words, the Rambam quotes the two Gemaras separately, which means that he doesn't think they're talking about the same thing. He quotes them separately as though they're two unrelated conversations. As a matter of fact, we'll see in a moment, and I tried to color code it here, the source number 3, the first Rambam, corresponds to the first Gemara, source number 1. They're both in white. And source number 4, the second Rambam, that's in gray, that corresponds to that second Gemara, source number 2, which is also in gray. Now, if you want to, you can elicit it from the people with whom you're learning. Like, let's take a look at these two Rambams. Here's what Rambam is. Here's the type of work he was writing. He was trying to pull out the bottom line of the Gemara, the practical halacha lamasa, and put it into, organize it, move away from the conversational style of Gemara into a more of a strict organization. And you can ask people, like, let's look at these two passages of Rambam together. And are they both? The Rambam is always quoting text. That's maybe a third point you're going to want to make about Rambam. It's a code of halacha. He's trying to give bottom line halacha lamasa. He's trying to put everything into order. And he's always quoting earlier sources. He's always quoting a Mishnah, a Gemara, some other Sefer of Chazal. So when you read, on the rare occasions that he actually has his own idea, he'll say, here's what I think. Yeroi Ali, it seems to me. But normally, he's quoting earlier sources. So who is he quoting where? So as we'll see, source number 3, the first Rambam, Rambam in Perek Dalet, the fourth chapter of Hilchas Tefillah, that's quoting that first Gemara, Daf Lamed. The second Rambam, Perek Yud, the tenth Perek of Hilchas Tefillah, source number 4, that's quoting the second Gemara, Daf Lamed Dalet. And that's really surprising because they sound like they're talking about the same thing, right? They're talking about the same topic, Kavanah B'Tefillah. It's important to have Kavanah. So not only when we read the two Gemaras, we were struck by one problem, which is they seem inconsistent. They're saying two different things. Is Kavanah critical throughout or not? Now, with the Rambam, it also almost seems like it's two different topics. Like, why is he quoting in two different chapters of Hilchas Tefillah? Now, as is so often the case, sometimes you ask a second question, you're able to answer your first question, right? A Jew stereotypically answers a question with a question. That's sort of what's going on here. Right? If there's one problem looking at the Gemaras, how important is Kavanah? If you look at the Rambam, he seems to make them into two topics. By the way, let's take a look before we move on. Let's actually read these Rambams. Let's dip into the Rambams and we'll see indeed that that the first Rambam was coined the first Gemara, second Rambam was coined the second Gemara. Let's start with that second Rambam, source number four, and we'll work backwards. Misha Hispalel, here again, this is in the 10th parak of Hilchos Tevilah, 10th chapter. Misha Hispalel Volo Kivinas Libo. A Jew is davening, but didn't have Kavana, Salev. Yachzer Hispalel Bekavani. You're going to guy, it didn't count. Tevilah without any Kavana. What type of Tevilah is that? But how much do you need? And Kivinas Libo, Baracha Rishonas Shuvan Etzarach. But if you had Kavana the first Baracha, that's minimally sufficient. So which Gemara is this Rambam source number four quoting? Right? Clearly. Right? The second Gemara. Right? Kavana is important, but first bracha is enough. Right? That was that second Gemara in the gray. The first Rambam, source number three, he says, Kavanas Halev Ketzad. The context of this fourth chapter is he's talking about items that are central, that are critical to tefillah. So one of them is kavanas halev. Kavana is critical. He says, what do you mean that kavana is critical? Kol tefillah she'enet b'kavana enet tefillah. Let's savor the words of the Rambam. He says, any tefillah without kavana just isn't tefillah. V'im hispaleh below kavana, if you did have daven without kavana, chozer mispaleh b'kavana, you got to daven again. And it goes on to say, daito mishubeshes, if you realize that you're too distracted, that you're just not in the zone, so you gotta get in the zone first and then daven. That line about checking to see whether you're in the zone or not, which Gemara is he quoting? The first one, right? Where he said, La'olam back source number one, Yamod Adam Ezatzmo. So clearly, the first Rambam was coined the first Gemara, white to white. The second Rambam was coined the second Gemara, gray to gray. And the same problem we have in the Gemara as we have in the Rambams. In the second Rambam, he says, well, Kavana is only critical in the first Bracha. Kivinas Liba Bracha Rishon Shuvin Etzarach. That was source number four. So source number three, he says that Kavana is critical, and his Pablo Kavana, Chomes Pablo Kavana, but there's not a word, not a whisper about the first Bracha versus any other. It's almost as though the two passages of Rambam, they're not talking to each other. What's going on? And yet another problem. What's with the Rambam seems a little redundant. He says the halacha is in hispal below kavan in source number three, chos b'spal kavan. You daven without kavan, you got to read daven. So why does he say beforehand? It's almost like a essential statement. Kol tefillah she'enet b'kavana enet tefillah. Tefillah without kavana just isn't tefillah. But then he goes on to say, what that means is, you daven without kavan, you got to redo it. So why is he making sort of like this essential programmatic statement at first? Tefillah without kavana just isn't tefillah. Almost like a definition. So we got a lot of problems right now. And we're about to solve them. But let's just recap what our problems are. Always a good thing to do. We started earlier with big picture questions. What's tefillah all about? You know, formal, informal, wordless, what's going on? Okay. And then we put that aside. And we're still putting that aside for now. Said, let's dive in to some little cues in order to get back to those big A's, right? Let's dive into some detailed questions. And we're looking here at the sugya specific of kavana b'tefillah, and super specifically, is kavana critical or just ideal? And we're seeing the Gemaras seem to contradict each other. Is it critical throughout Shemar Esrei or only critical in the first bracha? And so do the Rambams, but it's the same man, the Rambam. He seems to contradict himself between chapter 4 and chapter 10. Is kavana critical throughout or only in the first bracha? Another problem is, a second problem, is that the Rambam is quoting these two Gemaras in two different chapters as though they're two different topics, because after all, the Rambam is a big stickler for organization. Things are where they belong. The address matters. But it's the same topic. Why is it in two different places? And number three was, what was that line, like a definition? Tefillah without kavana just isn't tefillah at all. Not just you didn't do a good enough job, you didn't daven. What does that mean? I said the words. So three problems with the Gemara and the Rambam. So the solution lies in saying, well, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, and you can find, if you want to look at inside, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik is in source number five. But the question, the conversation we've just been having is essentially these these bulleted questions, first set of bulleted questions right after source number four. That's that we've been developing it verbally. So Reb Chaim says, well, let's think about that second question, right? If our first question was contradiction, what's the rule? Tefillah critical throughout or just in the first bracha? The second question was, why is Rambam putting in two different chapters? These are two different topics. Reb Chaim says, well, maybe they are two different topics. But how could it be? In both cases, talk about kavana. So Reb Chaim says, well, maybe the word kavana can mean more than one thing. What could it mean? So here we come to another really big question. When you say kavana, right, we want to have more kavana in our davening. Right? We've heard that said. We've probably said it ourselves. We've thought it. We've said it. Someone said it to us, about themselves, about us, whatever. Right? We want to have more kavana in tefillah. What would that look like? To have more kavana would mean thinking what? What would you say? Go ahead. Don't be bashful. Oh, someone's coming in the chat. Yeah. Knowing what the words mean. Yes. Thank you, Shachar, right? This, the sax, the art scroll, the birnbaum for our grandparents, right? Whatever it is. What the pirush amilas? What am I saying? Like we were saying before. I say the bracha rufeinu, I'm thinking about health. I'm thinking about sick people. I'm thinking about healthy people staying healthy. Right? I say baruch aleinu, I'm thinking about financial stability, tikkah b'shofar, we're talking about kibbutz galut, and so on and so forth. Thinking about what I'm saying. That's usually what we mean, and that's certainly a good thing. But here's what the Reb Chaim makes a fascinating point. He says, excellent. So you guys are hitting the nail on the head in the chat. He says, let's actually read that first Rambam. Halacha, source number three. Let's move on to the next section. We were reading Perek Dal Halacha Tezvav, and now here, Halacha Tezayin. Ketzad hi kavana. The Rambam says, well, what is the kavana that we're talking about? Again, this is kavana type one, the one that's more critical. Sheyifane es libo, and let's notice what the Rambam does not say. Sheyifane es libo mekol machshavos. It says you want to clear your mind of all extraneous thoughts. I'm sorry, the English translation broke onto the next page. V'yira atzmo ki'ilu hu omed. Now you're going to see yourself as though you're standing lefnei Hashchina, in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To visualize as though you're standing face to face with God. What does the Rambam not mention a word of? What does not appear in the definition of Kavana? Kyle, yeah, what do you want to say? Yeah, Pirush Hamilas. Nothing about the words. Exactly. Shachar, what the words mean. Didn't even mention that you're saying anything. There's no discussion about conversation. It's knowing that you are in the presence of God, that you're face to face with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Reb Chaim says, what you and I thought was Kavana, what we grew up thinking that Kavana means thinking what the words mean, that's Kavana type two. There are two different types of kavana. Obviously, the word kavana means intent. It means concentration. But concentrating, thinking about what? So what we always thought was kavana, it's true, that's the less critical one. That's a type two kavana. In Gemara source number two, in Rambam source number four, it's important. Obviously, it's important. It's valuable to know what you're talking about when you speak. It's a little bit silly not to. Yeah, they tell a story, I think, with a line from Lev Yitzchak Berditchev. Lev Yitzchak Berditchev is one of the great, famous early Chassidish Rebbes. He was one of the most famous students of Mizritch Magid, who was in turn probably the most famous Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of Chassidus. But Lev Yitzchak of Berditchev was known for his extraordinary Avos Yisrael. He loved Jews, always tried to see the best in every Jew. So they say that one time someone comes over to complain to him, look at these people, some of the people in shul, they're just mumbling the words, they don't know what they're talking about, they're just, you know, they're not even pronouncing the words properly, just rrr. So this fellow comes over, Lev Yitzchak, all self-righteous about it. Lev Yitzchak says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu as our parent, Avinu Shebashamayim. So, says the baby cries, you'll be Zoche, or perhaps already have been, to have a baby of your own. It's remarkable that long before the baby picks up language, the parents understand within a couple of months, like, what this cry means, I'm hungry, and that cry means I'm tired. This cry means, that sound means, you know, I need a fresh diaper. That sound means I want to be held. Right? So I believe it's accepted. Okay. So he's not saying the words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Avinu Sheba Hashamayim. He's a parent, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu understands the, you know, understands the child, even the child isn't even articulating words. Okay, a positive perspective. But then the way they quoted, Leitzig went on to say, but of course, if you could speak to Ribbono Shel Olam as an adult child, why would you choose to speak to him as an infant child? Right. So of course, Kavana and Kavana Pirush HaMilas is ideal. Of course, it makes a whole lot of sense to know what you're talking about, but, says Reb Chaim, that second Gemara, that second Rambam, that Kavana is ideal but not critical except in the first Bracha, that's talking about Kavana's Pirush HaMilas, knowing what the words mean. Ideal but not critical. The first Kavana, which is more critical, is not about the words. The first Kavana is knowing that you are standing in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Omed Lifnei Hashem. And Rambam was quite clear about that, right? As we just saw. Source number three. The first Rama, which corresponded to the first Gemara, he said, you see, you visualize yourself as though you're Omid Lefnei Hashem. Okay. So what have we solved so far? Right? By following that second question, hey, how come the Rambam puts the conversation, the Gemara put it into, but the Rambam put it into, that's more troubling because he's trying to organize things by topic. They're two different locations, it must be two different topics. Right? So that gave us insight, well, maybe there are two different types of Kavana. And in fact, we read the Rambam, source number three. Hey, he's talking about Kavan Sa'omad Lefnei Hashem. So Reb Chaim suggests, you read source number five, you'll see that he suggests this. He suggests in the first paragraph of source number five, he says, oh, it must be that the second Kavana, source number four, and the Gemara, source number two, that's about Kavanas Pirush HaMilas. Okay. So we already have two different types of Kavana. Each one has its own halachic regulations. Kavanas Pirush HaMilas is ideal but not critical. Except in the first bracha, Kavanas Omid Lefnei Hashem is absolutely critical. Reb Chaim goes on to explain this more. Now we just sort of gave an answer. Well, the two different types of kavanas have two types of rules. Okay, but why? And after all, like, we came into this thinking, or many of us came into this thinking, that kavana means art scroll, sax. Right? Kavana means what the words mean. So how could that be that that's less critical? And this kavana we never heard of, but realizing you're in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was more critical. What does that mean? Why? And remember we had a third question, the language of the Rambam. That funny line. He didn't just say, if you daven without kavana, you got to re-daven. He said, before he said that, he first made like a essential statement. Tefillah without kavana isn't tefillah. Not just that you didn't do it right, it isn't an act of tefillah. Now, think about it. That's really strange. I opened the siddur, I said Shmona Esrei. I did tefillah. Maybe I didn't do it right. I didn't do a good enough job if I didn't have kavana, but say it's not tefillah at all. So Reb Chaim presents, he does it very quickly, and in this context, I'll share the concept. You can figure out as you present it again, like I said before, knowing your audience is absolutely critical. You can present what I'm about to present for the next minute or two fully, or just craft and snip a piece. But a general halachic principle. Let's take a step back for a moment. We'll come back to tefillah. But a general halachic principle, this cuts across many areas of halacha. When we think about intent and action, right? Let's even say in a criminal context, right? A Jew does an avera, a halachic crime of some sort. Whether ben am lachaver, ben am lamakam, right? So you've probably heard the terms shogeg versus mezid. Right? Mezid is when I know that what I'm doing is wrong, and shogeg is when I didn't realize that what I was doing was wrong. Right? So in any area of halacha, right, whether it's theft or it's Shabbos or it's kashrus, whatever it is, right? Mezid means I knew this was wrong, I knew this was a violation, and I gave in to temptation, I did it anyways. That's mezid, intentional. Shogeg is where I didn't know or forgot that this was forbidden. You know, maybe I woke up from a long nap on Shabbos afternoon on the deck. And I was still sort of half asleep. I had forgotten that it was Shabbos. So I picked up the watering can and started watering the plants. And then I realized, oh, it's Shabbos. I can't water the plants on Shabbos. Or I forgot, or never knew, that one's not permitted to water plants on Shabbos, right? That would be a shogeg, where I didn't realize or I had forgotten that what I'm doing is wrong. But then there's an even lesser level of action, where it's not that I don't realize what I'm doing is wrong, but I don't even realize what I'm doing. I'm not even aware of my action. So let's say I'm in a town. I'm going to spend Shabbos in a town without an Erev. And some of us are used to that, and some of us are not used to that. So I was walking around all Shabbos with something in my pocket. I didn't even realize that something in my pocket. Let's say it happens often for a Jew who's used to being in a community with an Erev. So you're not in the habit of checking your pockets. You spend one Shabbos outside of an Erev, and he forgot to check his pockets. But Shabbos is over, Havdalah, he reaches into his pockets, and there he has a note here. He's been carrying all Shabbos. But it's not that he forgot that he's not supposed to carry outside of an Erev, or he didn't know. It's not that he forgot that it was Shabbos. It's not that he was shogeg. It's not that he didn't realize the legality of what he's doing. It's that he didn't even know that he was carrying. He had no idea there was anything in his pockets. He didn't even realize what he was doing. If you don't have any awareness of your action, that's not even shogeg. It's what we call misasek. If you want to see that word, it's in source number 5. Mem taf ayin samach kuf. To be misasek, you don't even realize right over there. Misasek. That's you don't realize what you're doing. You walk into a bathroom on Shabbos and just out of habit, turn the light on. It's not that I forgot that it was Shabbos. I wasn't even thinking. It just automatic flick of the wrist. So that's not even shogeg. That's probably misasek. Misasek, according to many, misasek is not punishable whatsoever. And according to many, that's the approach Reb Chaim takes here. A larger conversation beyond the scope of this year. Misasek, it's as though, as Reb Chaim says, Embo din maisa. It's as though I didn't do that act. It doesn't really, if I'm not even aware of what I'm doing, that act doesn't relate to me. Again, not shogeg, where I didn't realize it was right that it was wrong. Misasek, I didn't even know what I was, wasn't even aware of what I was doing. I wasn't aware that I was carrying. I wasn't aware that I was eating something. I wasn't aware of what I was doing. I wasn't aware of what I was doing. I lacked kavanas pe'ula, awareness of the action. And it's as though I didn't do it. It's halachic as though the thing happened on its own. How can the act relate to me, to the actor, if and I'm not even aware? So that's the concept of misasek, as I said a couple minutes ago. I took a sidebar to clarify this concept. You may want to present it fully, or not, or partially. But here's the key, the minimum key point. Reb Chaim says that what the Rambam is telling us, when he says, not just if you didn't have kavana, omer lefnei Hashem, you got to do it over, but it's not a, this is so critical. Why is it so critical? And he said, it's not even a tefillah. He says, you know why? Because if you don't realize that you're standing in the presence of Hashem, you're a misasek. You didn't realize that you were davening. So it's as though you didn't daven. Okay? That's pretty neat, right? If you have this concept of misasek, that fits neatly. What did you say, Shachar? Yes. He's let's take a look. Is he commenting in particular, Rambam? It's very subtle. If you read the Reb Chaim in source number 5, it's very subtle, it's very quick. He slides in that line about Misasek, but as we're about to demonstrate, I think this is the key point that's going to solve, this is the key that's about to open some very big doors for us. Now, I think he doesn't make it clear when Rama is driving him to say it, but I think it's the 2 points I just made. Number one, why does Rama have to make this sort of general essential statement called tefillah she'en b'kavana ena tefillah, that without kavana it's as though you didn't do an act of tefillah at all, and bechalal, I sort of, why is it logical? Why is the, what's the svar for the chiluk? Why is it logical that the kavana of awareness that you're standing in the presence of God is more critical than translation? But let's think about what just happened. This was a very deft move by the Rambam, by Reb Chaim. Because what he just told us is if you don't, let's translate this into English. If you have kavana number two, but not kavana number one, it's as though you didn't daven. If you have kavana, you're thinking what the words mean, but I wasn't aware that I was standing in the presence of Hashem, I'm a misasik. Why am I a misasik? I knew I was doing tefillah. I knew I was in shul. I knew I was saying words. I just wasn't thinking about God. So Reb Chaim just told us, in a word, is that the definition of tefillah, what does it mean to do tefillah? What does it mean to daven? It doesn't mean to say words. It doesn't mean to recite a text. To daven is to stand in the presence of Hashem. What we do when we daven is we recite text. We have a conversation with Hashem, and the minimal conversation is Shmona Esrei. Feel free to add more if you want. But that's the method. That's not the essence of what it is. Now, let me give you an example. Different context, but not totally unrelated. I hope so. So here we go. Buckle your seatbelts. I'll give you a mashal. Something to make this a little more tangible. Because we're getting a little abstract here. I want to make it more tangible. Think about a good friend of yours you've had for a number of years. Someone you're really close with. Can you remember the first time you met? For some people, yes. For some people, we've known each other since kindergarten. I don't remember. The first time we met, I don't remember what it was. Even if you do. No, I remember we met first, 7 years ago. Do you remember what you spoke about the first time you met each other? Maybe. Sometimes. But lots of times, not. Right? Even though that first conversation may have been critical, sort of like in making the connection, in building and founding the friendship. And yet you don't remember the first conversation lots of times. Why? Because it wasn't really about the conversation. It was about the vibe. You were spending time with each other, right? Think about a good date, a good first date, or think about a good interview, a good business interview, right? Or two people are thinking of potentially partnering on some startup, some new enterprise, right? So they sit down over coffee. So sometimes the essence of the conversation is content, right? What's your business plan? How will be your strategy? Right? But a lot of times, what's really critical is not the content of what you talk about. It's the vibe. It's the spending time with each other. Now, you're not just going to sit down for coffee and stare at each other. That would be weird and awkward. Of course, when you're together, you're going to talk about stuff. But again, sometimes when you sit down for coffee with someone, the real point is the content. But other times, of course, you talk about things. But the main point isn't the content of what you're talking about. It's the spending time together. It's the sitting down for coffee together. It's that good date. So I think that's a powerful mashal. Because Reb Chaim is really, if you begin to unpack this, the definition of tefillah is not saying words. That's why if you don't know what words you said, it's not ideal, but you're not a misasik. But if you don't realize you're talking to God, then you don't realize that you're davening. I knew that I was saying words. I knew that I was in shul, or nowadays in my living room. I knew I was standing with a sitter. I knew I was saying the words of Shemoneh Esrei, but that's not tefillah. That's what we do when we're doing tefillah. But what tefillah is, the definition of tefillah, is amid lefnei Hashem. So if I went through Shemoneh Esrei, but I wasn't thinking about God, and let's be honest, I think all of us have been there, at least at times, right? Rama says, well, then you missed the essence. You didn't realize you were being misbal. You're like the guy who doesn't realize there's something in his pocket. You didn't realize you were carrying. Well, here, you didn't realize you were being misbal. I realized I was saying words, but I didn't realize I was being misbal because to be misbal means to be in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, tefillah means that we get to sit down for coffee, so to speak, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu several times a day. We get to spend a few minutes with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, obviously, we're there with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have things to talk to him about. But the talking is what we do when we're on the date with Hashem. But sitting down for coffee with Hashem, the sitting down, or in this case, standing up with Hashem, that's the essence of the tefillah. We just turned the key, the little key in the little keyhole. We were dealing up until this point with a lot of very detailed questions. Remember that? The little Q leads to a very big A. All of a sudden, dealing with a detail of a detail. Kavana is a detail of tefillah, and I want to know, well, is kavana critical? Is it not critical? This gemara, that gemara, first bracha, all the brachas, Rambam, here, there, two Rambams, location, position, all of a sudden, whoa. In solving that those detailed questions, we just came across a very, very, very big vista. We just redefined what tefillah is. The words of tefillah are the method. They're the tool. But what tefillah is amid lefnei Hashem, standing in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Wow. There are, within the Beis Medrash, there are other sugyas that can be explained also using this concept. There are other problems elsewhere in Hilchot Tefillah that can be solved with this understanding that tefillah, unlike perhaps other parts of the davening more broadly, unlike other brachos, tefillah specifically is a face-to-face with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a likras elokecha, lifnei Hashem, we're in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But I want to come back now to our bigger question. That idea, by the way, lifnei Hashem, from a Chumash perspective, lifnei Hashem means what? When the Chumash says lifnei Hashem, what does it mean? Where is lifnei Hashem? We'll get to that in a second. The psukim usually use lifnei Hashem to mean in the Beis Hamikdash. Usmachtem lifnei Hashem elokeichem. You find throughout Chumash, lifnei Hashem means in the Beis HaMikdash. The halachas of Lulav are different than the Beis HaMikdash. Lifnei Hashem. And so on and so forth. You eat karbanos, lifnei Hashem. Sometimes it means specifically Beis HaMikdash. Sometimes it means more broadly Yerushalayim as sort of a spillover extension of the Beis HaMikdash. But that's fascinating. That the Beis HaMikdash is the place which is lifnei Hashem. But in tefillah, we get to wherever we are, be lifnei Hashem. And what Shachar just said about the heart, so here's fascinating. I actually did not put this into the Maamar Makamos, but you may want to include it. Gemara, the very beginning of Maseches Tanis, the Rambam quotes it beginning in Sefer HaMitzvos when he talks about tefillah. What's the Rambam is of the follows this Gemara, the very, very beginning of Maseches Tanis. What's the source of tefillah in Chumash? Well, Avdo B'chol Levavchem, the Gemara says, to worship Hashem with all your heart. Avod usually means something you do with your hands, bringing a carbon, or doing some other type of work. So the Gemara says, we say it in Kriya Shema, what does it mean? To worship, to work with your heart? What sort of work do you do with your heart, your mind? The answer is, the Gemara says, tefillah. That must be the work of tefillah. We've heard that before. Simple question, though. Which is the main organ of tefillah? So until 10 minutes ago, we would have said our mouths. Right? You say the davening. Right? So is that funny? You never asked yourself that before. That Gemara and Titus is really strange. Why is tefillah avodah shebelev? It's avodah shebepeh. I mean, your lave is good. It's good to have the lave too, but the primary organ of tefillah is the mouth, not the heart and the mind. Right? That's a good question. Here's the answer. Reb Chaim gives us the answer. The essence is the heart and mind. It's the awareness that you're in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's a mental, spiritual reality. What you do when you're being mispalel is you use your mouth. You don't just stand there mutely before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As Levi Yitzchak said, you're going to speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu like an adult child. You'll have an intelligent conversation. But the essence is that being in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then all of a sudden, we look at all those questions, those big, broad questions, from page number one, right? Which one is tefillah? Is tefillah the sitter, the machzor shmon esrei, or is tefillah the informal, unofficial, just the conversation with the Kadosh Baruch Hu? And then that idea of the Rav, so poetic, but what does it mean that shofar is a wordless tefillah? How could tefillah be wordless? What does that mean? Wordless tefillah, isn't it an oxymoron? Isn't tefillah about saying words? The answer is no. Tefillah is about communing with our Kadosh Baruch Hu. Being in the more intense presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Amid Lefnei Hashem. Usually, now, so what the Chachamim said is, the minimum of what you say in the context of tefillah is Shmona Esrei. If you want to say more, Kol HaKavod. You can ad lib, you can enhance as much as you like. The minimum is to say the Shmona Esrei. But again, let's not confuse methods with essence. The minimum method, the minimum tool, the minimum content, if you will, the minimum structure of tefillah is a Shemoneh Esrei, plus whatever else you want to say. But again, whether it's what during Shacharis Mincha Maariv you want to add more within the context of Shemoneh Esrei, go ahead, or you want to add a tefillah. At some point during the day, I'm in a moment of crisis, or I feel particularly far from Hashem, or I feel particularly close to Hashem, as the case may be. Whisper a personal request, talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is an act of tefillah. It's an additional act of tefillah. I am Lifnei Hashem. And even shofar, we say in the Haggadah that the Jewish people, they called Avayizaku. They called out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem accepted as though it were a verbal tefillah. But fundamentally, that was a non-verbal tefillah. What does that mean, non-verbal tefillah? Is it an oxymoron? No, it isn't, because tefillah isn't about talking. Tefillah is about thinking and feeling in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's an avoda. It's an avoda shebelev. And let me leave you with two thoughts. Thinking back, I hope this is a sugya that you can share. Again, as I said before, it's a audience appreciation is always critical in any interpersonal interaction, and particularly in teaching of any type. Got to know the goal isn't to have said something. The goal is to have communicated effectively so the other person has added insight. So obviously you're going to want to tailor this to everyone's, certainly over Shavuos, each of you has a unique audience. You're going to want to tailor and figure out who in the house would you want to share this with, before Shavuos, after Shavuos, during Shavuos, Leil Shavuos, and tailor appropriately. And certainly, as I said before, the opening questions, different people have different questions. But many questions, as Shachar said, this is the key. This is the turnkey to answer lots of, to make sense of so much of tefillah. It stands to reason that if you can define tefillah properly, you can make sense of it. The last thing I want to leave you with is a practical challenge. And you can choose to share this with other people as well. It's, you can call it the 5-second challenge or the 2-minute challenge. Because, you know, some of us are very busy. Some of us are more busy than others. But probably all of us can spare 2 minutes a week. 2 minutes a week, or out of the 168 hours a week, you probably can find 2 minutes. 2 minutes a week could transform your tefillah. And it works like this. It's really very simple. And it's more or less in Shulchan Aruch. It's more or less the Gemaras that we learned. It's take 5 seconds before Shemoneh Esrei. For the next week, take 5 seconds before Shemoneh Esrei to do nothing fancy, no Kabbalistic texts, nothing. Just stop and don't say a word. Just stop before your Shemoneh Esrei and just think to yourself for 5 seconds, I am about to speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm about to stand for the next couple minutes in the presence of God. Simple. Simple and profound. And by the way, 5 seconds sounds like nothing. But we're so used to always being in motion, always talking, always doing, to just stop for 5 seconds and do nothing but think about a single concept. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It takes some getting used to just pause. The Sefer HaKuzari, in the beginning of Mamar Shlishi, when he speaks about tefillah, he talks about the first preparation is actually preparing, getting your limbs ready for tefillah. Just like an athlete, you get yourself in the zone. He says you have to get in the zone of tefillah. You have to look like you're about to step into me with a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Your hands aren't busy with anything. You're not looking around. He says you get your, I hesitate to say game face on. But we all know now with the masks, you can still tell if someone is smiling even if they're wearing a mask, because a real smile, your eyes smile too, right? So he says, if your face looks expectant, anticipatory, about to have an exciting and a little daunting, about to have an important, unique conversation with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and my face looks like that, and my arms are relaxed, maybe I take a few deep breaths. And as we said, take a few deep breaths, and just for 5 seconds, just a few deep breaths, relax your arms, relax your face, and think to yourself, simple, profound, I'm about to speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. 5 seconds per tefillah, that's 15 seconds a day. That's less than 2 minutes a week. That's less than 8 minutes a month. If we invested these 8 minutes over the course of the next month, you could call it the 8 minute challenge if you want. I suspect that by the time we come to the end of Chodesh Sivan in a month from now, our tefillah will be vastly improved. It's again, and this is as we began, part of the magic of learning is it's the transformative turnkey. Right? We got involved in what seemed like details, and the Gemara and the Rambam and here and there and all these technical textual details, and they're interesting in their own right and they're important in their own right, and they also open up broad vistas of understanding and defining tefillah, understanding tefillah, appreciating tefillah, and practically in terms of a way forward for how I could build progress into my tefillah. So I want to thank each and every one of you for coming together tonight. I had the chance to learn together. I hope these ideas are ideas that will be practically inspiring to us in our own tefillah. And hopefully we can share the bright lights of Torah on Shavuos night and beyond with others as well. So I want to thank each and every one of you.